Sunset Productions presents an Atlanta Radio Theater Company dramatic production. H.P. Lovecraft's The Shadow Over Innsmouth, adapted for audio by Greg Nickel and Thomas E. Fuller.
During the winter of 1927-28, officials of the federal government made a strange and secret investigation of certain conditions in the ancient Massachusetts seaport of Innsmouth.
The public first learned of it in February, when a vast series of raids and arrests occurred, followed by the deliberate burning and dynamiting, under suitable precautions, of an enormous number of crumbling, worm-eaten, and supposedly empty houses along the abandoned waterfront.
Uninquiring souls let this occurrence pass as a minor clash in a spasmodic war on bootleg alcohol.
The Shadow Over Innsmouth.
By Howard Phillips Lovecraft.
Shadow over Innsmouth.
Over Innsmouth, the shadow.
The shadow, the shadow.
Over Innsmouth,
the shadow.
There is a shadow.
Through the shadow.
They've been telling things about Innsmouth, whispering them mostly for the last 100 years, I guess. And I gather they're more scared than anything else. But I come from upstate Vermont, and that kind of story just don't go down with me.
Now mind you, I've never actually seen Innsmouth. But I've got nothing aside from disgust from a community that lets itself slip so far down the cultural scale. It seems there is a peculiar secret cult which has gained force in Innsmouth. The esoteric order of Dagon that engulfed all the Orthodox churches. It's some debased pagan thing Captain Marsh imported from the East. I mean, back when the Innsmouth fisheries seemed to be going barren. Well, the weird cult's persistence is quite natural in view of the sudden and permanent return of abundantly fine fishing once the esoteric order replaced the Freemasons in the old Innsmouth Masonic Hall. But I say any cultured person should shun that ancient decaying town.
How'd you like to be living in a town like this here, Innsmouth, with everything a-rotten and a-dying and boarded up? Things crawling and bleating and barking and hopping around black cellars and high attics everywhere you turn, hey? How'd you like to hear the howling night after night from the esoteric hall of Dagon Hall? And know what unholy things is doing part of the howling? You think this old man's crazy? Well, sir, let me tell you, that ain't the worst. That ain't the worst. That ain't the worst.
My name is Orin Phillips, and I had never heard of Innsmouth until the day I saw it. I was celebrating my coming of age by touring New England, sightseeing with some antiquarian and genealogical research thrown in, and was on my way from Newburyport to Arkham, where my mother's family originated. Traveling mostly by train, but always seeking the cheapest possible route, I balked at the high fare quoted on the final leg of my journey.
One-way fare, Newburyport to Mystic to Arkham, $2.57.
$2?
Yeah, in 57 cents.
That's a bit more than I'd planned on spending. Isn't there a cheaper fare to Arkham?
Not by train, they ain't. Now, you could take that old bus, I suppose, but it ain't thought much of hereabouts.
Butts? My guidebook here doesn't say anything about a bus.
Well, it wouldn't now, would it? Bus goes through Innsmouth. Wonder it keeps running at all. I never see more than 2 or 3 people on it, and them's just Innsmouth folks. Leaves the square in front of the Hammond's drugstore. Oh, about 10 a.m. and 7 p.m., unless they've changed recently.
So, the difference is the bus gets to Arkham by way of Innsmouth, and the train gets there by way of Mystic. I've been to Mystic. What's this Innsmouth like?
Innsmouth? Well, it's a queer kind of town down at the mouth of Monoxet. Used to be quite a city. Quite a port before the War of 1812, but all gone to pieces in the last 100 years or so. More empty houses than there are people, I guess, and no business to speak of except fishing, lobstering, and the Marsh Gold Refinery. I guess it used to be a big thing, and old man Marsh owns it. Must be richer than Crustus. Developed some deformity late in life that makes him keep out of sight. His mother seems to be some kind of South Sea Islander. Served by Raised Cain about 50 years ago when he married an Ipswich girl. Folks hereabouts try to cover up any Innsmouth blood in them. But Marsh's children and grandchildren look just like anyone else, so far as I can see. Though, come to think of it, the older children don't seem to be around much lately.
Why is everyone so down on Innsmouth?
Well, young fella, they've been telling things about Innsmouth, or whispering them mostly, for the last 100 years, I guess. Some of the stories would make you laugh. About old Captain Marsh driving bargains with the devil and bringing imps up out of hell to live in Innsmouth. And about devil worship and awful sacrifices near the wharfs that people stumbled on about 1845 or thereabouts. But I come from Benton, Vermont, and that kind of story just don't go down with me.
The ticket taker's bizarre tale of decayed Innsmouth and its accompanying hits of decadence and decay intrigued me. The bus would not be leaving until the next day, so I resolved to spend the intervening time in a little research. After some initial reticence and suspicion, I found people surprisingly eager to discuss Innsmouth. Perhaps this was to warn me, or perhaps I was just a new audience for old stories.
Yeah, there's this black reef off the coast of Innsmouth, a devil's reef they call it, and the story is there's a whole legion of devils seen sometime on it, sprawled about or darting in and out of some of the caves near the top. Toward the end of the shipping days, the sailors used to make big detours just to avoid it.
Well, that is, sailors that didn't hail from Innsmouth. One of the things they had against old Captain Marsh was that he was supposed to land on it at night when the tide was right. Maybe he did. It's just barely possible. He was looking for pirate loot and maybe finding it. But there was talk of his dealing with demons there. Fact is, I think it was really the captain that gave the bad reputation to the reef.
Here you go, mister. One blue plate special. Innsmouth. Well, what it really is simply race prejudice. And I don't say I'm blaming those that hold it. New England ships used to do a lot with queer ports in Africa, Asia, and South Seas, and they sometimes brought some queer kinds of people back with them. They say there's still a bunch of Fiji Islanders somewhere around Cape Cod, if you know what I mean.
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Well, it's pretty clear that old Captain Marsh must have brought home some odd specimens. Certainly it's a strange streak in Innsmouth folks today. I don't know how to explain it, but it sort of makes you crawl. Well, some of them have queer, narrow heads with flat noses and bulgy, starry eyes that never seem to shut, and their skin ain't quite right. Rough and scabby, and the sides of the necks are all shriveled or creased up. Animals hate them. They used to have a lot of horse trouble before autos came in.
You know what's queer? Our fish are always thick off Innsmouth Harbor when there ain't any anywhere else around. But you just try to fish there yourself. See how the folks chase you off. They think they own the whole damn ocean.
Why, yes, there's a hotel in Innsmouth called the Gilman House. But I don't believe it could amount to much. I wouldn't advise you to try it. Better stay over here and take the 10 o'clock bus tomorrow morning, and then you can get an evening bus there for Arkham at 8 o'clock.
You know, it's always been kind of a mystery where the Marshes get the gold they refine. They never seem to do much buying in that line, but years ago they shipped out an enormous lot of ingots. Makes you kind of wonder where they're getting this stuff, don't it?
Used to be talk of a queer foreign kind of jewelry that was seen on some of the Marsh women folks. People always allowed that maybe old Captain Obed swapped for it in some heathen port, especially since he always ordered stacks of those glass beads and trinkets seafaring men used to get for native trade. Others thought he found their old pirate cash out in Devil Reef. But here's the funny thing. The old captain's been dead these 60 years, and there ain't been a good-sized ship out of the place since the Civil War. But just the same, the Marshes keep on buying those native trade things. Mostly glass and rubber gigaws, they tell me. Maybe the Innsmouth folks like to look at them themselves. God knows they've gotten to be about as bad as those South Sea cannibals or Guinea savages.
Right. Yes, there was definitely a local prejudice against Innsmouth and its inhabitants. After I left the diner, I located the Newburyport Public Library in hopes of finding facts instead of tall tales and legends. The staff was reluctant to discuss the matter, finally referring me to Ashton Clark's History of Essex County and its environs. Clearly, in the eyes of educated and uneducated alike, Innsmouth was considered a major case of civic degeneration. Innsmouth. Ah, here we go.
Innsmouth, founded in 1643 by Jeremiah Marsh. Noted for shipbuilding before the Revolution. a seat of great marine prosperity in the early 19th century. Population devastated by the great epidemic and riots of 1846. After the Civil War, all industrial life was confined to the Marsh Refinery Company and fishing, which has always been profitable due to the great abundance of fish around Innsmouth Harbor. Also noted for the so-called Innsmouth-style gold jewelry, which enjoyed a minor vogue in the 1880s. Specimens of this work can be found in the Ingersoll Museum of the Miskatonic University at Arkham and at the
Newburyport Historical Society.
Yes, sir? Can I help you?
I hope so. They told me over at the library that I could find a Miss Ann Tilton over here.
I am Ann Tilton.
A pleasure, Miss Tilton. I'm Orrin Phillips of Toledo, Ohio. I'm doing some research into Victorian American jewelry, and I was told that the Historical Society has a particularly fine collection of the so-called Innsmouth style. I was wondering if I might have a look.
Well, it's not so extensive as the Ingersoll collection in Arkham, but we do have some nice pieces, and of course the Marsh Tiara.
Oh, yes, the Marsh Tiara.
Oh, it's right over here, if you'll just follow me.
Oh, my God.
We refer to it as the Marsh Tiara because it's as close to tiara as anything else. Now, if you will note, it's quite tall in front, with a very large and curiously irregular periphery, as if designed for a head of almost freakish elliptical outline. The material seems to be predominantly gold, though a weird, lighter lustrousness hints at some strange alloy with an equally beautiful and scarcely identified metal. It's a condition that's almost perfect.
The longer I looked, the more the thing fascinated me. And in this fascination, there was a curiously disturbing element, hard to classify or account for. The longer I stared at them, the more sinister and monotonous the aquatic reliefs became. Among them were fabulous monsters of abhorrent grotesqueness and malignity, half Ithictian and half Bacterian in suggestion, which seemed to summon a haunting and uncomfortable sense of pseudo-memory, wholly primal and awesomely ancestral. At times, I fancy that every contour of those blasphemous fish frogs was overflowing with the quintessence of an unknown and an inhuman evil.
Mr. Phillips?
What? Oh, I'm sorry, I was just fascinated by it. The workmanship, the themes. What's the history behind it?
Oh, it's rather prosaic, I'm afraid. It was pawned at a shop on State Street in 1873 by a drunken Innsmouth man who was almost immediately killed in a brawl. The society acquired it directly from the pawnbroker.
But where did it come from? Surely it's not local.
Well, we have it classified as East Indian, or possibly Indo-Chinese, though frankly, the attribution is tentative. The society is inclined to believe that it was part of some pirate hoard discovered by old Captain Obed Marsh. I mean, based on the insistent offers of purchase at the very high price which the Marshes began to make just as soon as they knew of its presence. They have repeated those offers to this very day, despite the society's unwavering refusal to sell.
Amazing. Miss Tilden, you seem to be the local expert. What can you tell me about Innsmouth?
Well, there isn't much to tell, actually. It was a prosperous enough place until the great epidemic of 1846, when over half the population was carried off. And no one ever quite discovered what caused it, but it was probably some kind of foreign disease brought back from China or somewhere by the shipping. Well, it certainly was terrible. There were rather violent riots over it, and Innsmouth never recovered. There can't be more than 300 or 400 people living there now.
There does seem to be a rather strong prejudice against Innsmouth hereabouts.
Oh, yes, quite strong. I mean, the epidemic must have taken off the best blood in the place. They're a doubtful lot now. I suppose they're what they call white trash down south. Lawless and sly and full of secret things. However, I personally have nothing to do with them for Christian reasons. They're devil worshippers, you know.
Devil worshippers?
Oh, yes. In the 1850s, when the Innsmouth fishery seemed to be failing, well, the esoteric order of Dagon engulfed all the Orthodox churches. I mean, it's some kind of debased semi-pagan thing imported from the East. Well, the people were very vulnerable to it. I mean, especially since its arrival coincided with the sudden return of abundantly fine fishing. It replaced Freemasonry altogether and has its headquarters in the old Masonic Hall in New Church Green. Mr. Phillips, you seem to be quite interested in Innsmouth. Are you by any chance thinking of going there?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I am.
Well, far be it from me to speak ill of anyone, but I feel I must tell you that strangers aren't welcomed in Innsmouth. There have been rumors.
Rumors, Miss Tilden?
Rumors, Mr. Phillips. More than one stranger has disappeared there, and there is persistent talk of one who went crazy and is out at Danvers now. Let me give you a word of advice. Don't go there at night. Now, I've never been there myself, and I have no wish to go, but I suppose a daytime trip would be safe enough. In fact, if you're just interested in sightseeing and antiquities, Innsmouth might be just the place for you. It is very old, you know.
Yes. Yes, I know. Well, thank you very much for your time and consideration, Miss Tilton. I shall certainly take your advice under consideration when I make my plans.
Oh, please do, Mr. Phillips. Please do.
A shunned community. Mysterious jewelry and crowns. Devil worship. I would go to Innsmouth. To my architectural and historical anticipations had been added one of acutely anthropological. Yes, I would go to Innsmouth. Shortly before 10 the next morning, I stood awaiting the Innsmouth bus. As the hour of the bus's arrival drew near, I noticed that many of the people lounging around Old Market Square began to drift further up the street. Evidently, the locals' dislike for any Innsmouth connection had not been exaggerated. And then there it was, a small, dirty gray motor coach bearing a half-illegible sign on its windshield, Arkham, Innsmouth, Newburyport.
Newburyport! All out for Newburyport!
Joe Gentry, the bus driver, was a thin, stoop-shouldered man of about 35, but the odd, deep creases on his neck made him seem older. He had a narrow head with bulging, watery blue eyes that never seemed to blink, making his face dull and expressionless.
All aboard for Innsmouth! Arkham! Boarding now for Innsmouth! Arkham!
Suddenly, there spread over me a wave of spontaneous aversion which I could not explain. It struck me as very natural that the locals should avoid this man and his battered motor coach and shun all contact with the habitat of his kinfolk.
Final call! Boarding now for Innsmouth, Arkham!
Just what curious foreign blood was in this man I could not guess, yet I understood at once why the locals found him unaccountably alien. Mr. Gentry was evidently given to working around the fish docks, for he carried with him much of their characteristic smell. Somehow I disliked the idea of riding alone with him, but the time had come. I conquered my qualms and extended a $1 bill.
And what be your destination?
Innsmouth.
Innsmouth.
Innsmouth, fare to Innsmouth be 60 cents. Innsmouth. 40 cents, your change.
Gentry looked at me strangely as he returned the coins. I took a seat far behind him, and a moment later the vehicle started with a jerk and a cloud of exhaust vapor. I noticed that the people on the sidewalks avoided looking at us as we turned left onto High Street. The bus rumbled past the stately old mansions and still older colonial farmhouses, past the lower Green and Parker River, finally emerging into a long, monotonous stretch of open shore country.
There is a shadow.
A shadow over...
Innsmouth.
The day was warm and sunny. Out of the bus window, I watched the blue water and the sandy shoreline. We soon drew very near the beach as our narrow road veered off the main highway. There were no visible houses, and I could tell by the state of the road that traffic was very light hereabouts. The small, weather-beaten telephone poles carried only two wires. For hours, we rode onward. Once in a while, I noticed dead stumps and crumbling foundation walls above drifting sand, showing that this was once a fertile and thickly settled countryside. Perhaps the change came simultaneously with the Innsmouth epidemic of 1846. The smell of the sea took on an ominous implication as our course climbed steeply, and I felt a sense of disquiet in looking at the lonely crest ahead where the rutted roadway met the sky. The silent driver's bent, rigid back and narrow head seemed more disquieting, somehow more alien, almost hateful. Then we reached the crest and beheld the spread-out valley beyond with its far, misty horizon. But for the moment, all my attention was captured by the nearer panorama below me. I had, I realized, come face to face at last with rumor-shadowed Innsmouth.
Innsmouth.
There is a shadow.
A shadow.
Over Innsmouth.
Innsmouth was a town of wide extent and dense construction, yet one with a portentous shortage of visible life. From the tangle of chimneys came scarcely a wisp of smoke, and the vast huddle of sagging gambrel roofs and peaked gables conveyed the idea of wormy decay. Ruins of walls jutted out from the shore to end in indeterminate rottenness. And far out to sea, despite a high tide, I glimpsed a long, black line, scarcely rising above the water, yet carrying a suggestion of oddly latent malignancy.
Ria, Ria.
Zulu.
This, I knew, must be Devil Reef. As I looked, a subtle and curious sense of beckoning seemed to add to the reef's grim repulsion. Once or twice, I saw listless people working and groups of dirty ape-visaged children playing around weed-grown doorsteps. Somehow, these figures seemed more disquieting than the dismal buildings, for each one had certain peculiarities of face and motion which I instinctively disliked. Pervading everything was the most nauseating, fishy odor imaginable. The bus entered a wide street, bordered by churches on both sides. I observed a large pillared hall on the right-hand junction, its white paint now gray and peeling. Only with difficulty could I discern the black and gold sign bearing the words Esoteric Order of Dagon. This, then, was the former Masonic hall now given over to a degenerate cult. The raucous tone of the cracked bell distracted me, and I turned quickly to look at the squat-towered stone church across the street. The door of the church basement was open, revealing a rectangle of blackness inside. As I looked, an object seemed to cross the rectangle, burning into my brain a momentary conception of nightmare. I realized it was the church's pastor, clad in some peculiar vestments introduced by the Order of Dagon. Supplying the touch of bizarre horror was the tall tiara he wore, an almost exact duplicate of the one Miss Tilton had shown me the previous evening. Then we rolled into the town square and drew up to a tall, cupola-crowned building with remnants of yellow paint and a decrepit sign proclaiming it the Gilman House.
Innsmouth! All out for Innsmouth.
I was glad to get out of that bus and once proceeded to check my suitcase into the shabby hotel lobby. I then strolled out into the square, from which Joe Gentry's bus had already departed, and began my antiquarian exploration of the town.
There is a shadow.
A shadow.
Shadow over Innsmouth.
Ahead of me on one side of the cobbled open space was the straight line of the river. On the other, a semicircle of slant-roofed brick buildings of about the 1800 period. Street lamps were scarce and small, and I was glad that my plan was for departing before dark, even though I knew the evening's moon would be bright. These buildings were all in fair condition, included several shops. Among them, a grocery of the First National chain, a dismal restaurant, a drugstore, and a wholesale fish dealer's office. And at the eastern end of the square near the river, an office of the town's only industry, the Marsh Refining Company. I chose to make my first inquiries at the chain grocery, whose personnel was not likely to be native to Innsmouth. I found the shop attended by a solitary boy of approximately 17 years, and was pleased to discover and note his brightness and affability.
Good afternoon, mister. Welcome to First National Grocery, such as it is anyway. We're the smallest and emptiest store in the whole national chain, let me tell you.
On the contrary, son, your store seems quite well stocked.
That's because we don't have enough customers to buy all this stuff. Hardly any of the locals do business here. Lord knows what they eat. The natives around this place give me the shivers, let me tell you. If it weren't for the out-of-towners like yourself, I wouldn't have a living soul to talk to.
So you think I'm an out-of-towner?
Oh, no doubt about it. Hang around Innsmouth more than an hour and you can spot a native right quick. You don't have the wide lips most of them do. Maybe a little suggestion around the eyes, but I can tell by your walk. Not to mention your clothes that you're from out of town.
I take it you don't much care for Innsmouth folk.
Let me tell you, I don't care much for this place at all. It's fishy smell or it's creepy people. I'm from Arkham myself. Swell town Arkham is. I'm boarding here with a real nice family out of Ipswich. Go home every chance I get, let me tell you. My folks don't like me working in Innsmouth. No, sir, not at all.
Well, you say you despise the place, and your family wants you back in Arkham, so why do you stay on?
First National transferred me here. They even pay for my travel and help out with room and board. Mr. Block, my boss, says I'll be eligible for an assistant manager job in 3 months. Says they'll transfer me to the store in Dunwich.
Oh, you must be very excited.
Oh, yes, sir. Though I'm a little nervous after all the trouble there in Dunwich last year.
Well, Perhaps you can help me, son. I'm an antiquarian, and during the few hours I'm here, I'd like to see the oldest and most impressive buildings, explore the main library, perhaps take in a bit of the town's history.
Well, sir, let me tell you, there's no public library in Innsmouth, not even a chamber of commerce. But it's easy to find your way around. Let me see. You're on Federal Street right now. Over to the west, you'll find the fine old residence streets, Broad, Washington, Lafayette, and Adams. East side, over to the shore, there are the slums. Lots of old Georgian-style churches there, but they're all long abandoned.
Sounds promising. I've an especial love of Georgian architecture. Sometimes I feel as though I'm an outsider in this age.
Well, let me tell you, you'll sure feel like an outsider over in Innsmouth East Side. Wouldn't be well to make yourself too conspicuous in those neighborhoods. North of the river, the people are mighty sullen and downright hostile. Some strangers have disappeared.
Oh, I assure you, my tour will of necessity be a brief one.
Well, be especially brief around the Marsh Gold Refinery or any of the churches still in use. Or around the new church green at the Esoteric Order of Dagon Hall.
Yes, I observed that structure on my bus ride into town. It's rather ominous.
It's an odd sort of worship they practice there, let me tell you. Using the weirdest kind of ceremonials and clerical vestments. His creed is quite mysterious, hinting at certain transformations leading to bodily immortality on this earth, not in the afterlife.
You sound quite in awe of it.
Oh, sir, let me tell you. Before I left Arkham and come work here in Innsmouth, my pastor, Dr. Wallace of Asbury ME Church in Arkham, he says to me,
Frank, your father tells me you'll be leaving home soon.
Yes, Dr. Wallace. First National is transferring me to their store in Innsmouth.
Yes, so your father tells me. It sounds like a fine career opportunity for you, son. I'm happy for you.
Thank you, Dr. Wallace. I'm very excited about it.
And well, you should be, Frank. Innsmouth, that's a long way away. Will you be back on the weekends to attend my services, or is this goodbye for a while?
Well, I'll be coming back as much as I can, but it can't be every weekend. I was thinking of joining a church in Innsmouth.
No. No, Frank. You must never consider joining any church in Innsmouth. Listen to me, son. Stay away from all those Innsmouth churches.
But Dr. Wallace,
Stay away from those Innsmouth churches. Worship in private. Read the Christian texts, but do not join any Innsmouth church, ever.
And so I never did.
It sounds like your pastor was a trifle overconcerned with losing your weekly offerings.
Well, I know now it was good advice. Wouldn't want to spend too much time around those Innsmouth people. Hardly know what to make of them, let me tell you. Couldn't imagine how they pass the time apart from their fishing. Maybe they spend the daytime drunk, like Mr. Block, my boss, does. Plenty of bootleg booze to be had around here, let me tell you.
I have certainly no interest in that, but tell me what else you can about the locals.
Well, most of them all look the same, with those wide, ugly mouths and staring, unwinkling eyes. Say, have you heard any of them talk?
Only Joe Gentry, the bus driver who brought me here.
Oh, he's bad enough, but let me tell you, most of the voices around here are disgusting. It's plain awful hearing them chant to the churches at night, especially during their main festivals on, let me see, April 30th and October 31st.
May Eve and Hollow Mass.
How to see them swimming, too. They have swimming races out to Devil Reef, and hundreds of them do it all at once. It's a sight, let me tell you. You want to know about Innsmouth history, you see?
That's largely why I'm here, yes.
Well, I know who you ought to track down. There's this old codger, spends his time lounging around the fire station on Payne Street. Zanuck Allen's his name. He's a hoary old goat. 96 years old or something like that. A little touched in the head he is, let me tell you. He's Innsmouth's town drunk. Always peeking back over his shoulder as if he's afraid of something.
And you think this Zanuck Allen could provide me with more information on the town's background?
Well, not while he's sober, no. But grease him with some free booze and he'll talk ears off. He's been around long enough to know about everything and everyone in town.
Yes. A man in his 90s could well be a valuable resource, but... I'm afraid I don't have any access to any bootleg liquor, and I confess I'd feel quite awkward trying to buy some.
No problem, mister. From Mr. Block's private, under-the-counter stash. I'm sure he'll never miss it.
Thank you, son. And how might I find this firehouse where Zadok Allen spends his time?
Well, I can sketch you a map on one of these receipts. No, not quite big enough. I know, a grocery sack. Just let me tear a side off here. Now... we're right here. This is the Gilman House Hotel over here, and the Marsh Gold Refinery is over there. Washington Street, that's where the Marshes and the other gently bred people live. The Waits, the Gilmans, the Elliots, all live in huge houses. A lot of the street signs are down, let me tell you, so I better draw on the main streets on the west side.
Shadow.
There is a shadow.
Over Innsmouth. 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 Innsmouth.
The boy's map was rough. but after a moment's study, I was sure it would be a great help, and I accepted it with many thanks. Disliking the dinginess of the single restaurant I'd seen in town, I bought an ample supply of cheese crackers and ginger wafers to serve as a meal later on. Thus equipped, I set out on the streets of Innsmouth. My plan was to walk the principal streets, talk with any non-natives I might encounter, and return to the Gilman Hotel in time to catch the 8 o'clock bus to Arkham. Given the general community decay, I would limit my serious observation to this town's architecture alone. Thus I began my tour. Crossing the bridge and turning towards the roar of the lower waterfalls, I passed close to the Marsh Refinery, which stood oddly free of industrial noise. This building stood on the steep river bluff near a bridge and a confluence of the streets which I took to be the earliest civic center, displaced after the Revolutionary War by the present town square. The odor of fish was almost intolerable. Back on Main Street, I struck a region of utter desolation. Collapsing gambrel roofs formed a jagged and fantastic skyline, above which rose the ghoulish, decapitated steeple of an ancient church. Down unpaved streets, I watched the black, gaping windows of deserted hovels, many of which leaned at perilous and incredible angles to the sinking of their foundations. These windows stared so spectrally that it took courage to turn eastward to the waterfront. Fish Street was as deserted as Main, though many of its impressive brick and stone warehouses were still in excellent shape. Water Street was similar. There were great seaward gaps where the wharfs had been. I didn't see another living soul except for the scattered fishermen on the distant breakwater. The town was getting on my nerves more and more. With haste, I crossed the Water Street Bridge and headed north. Above the river, there were traces of squalid life, infrequent shambling forms in the dismal streets and rough, unpaved lanes. The alien strain in people was stronger there. The district harbored the more advanced cases of the Innsmouth look. I paused only long enough to admire two fine but ruinous old churches on an intersection before hastening out of the vile waterfront slum. My next logical goal was New Church Green, but somehow I could not bear to repass the church in whose basement door I had glimpsed that strangely crowned priest. Accordingly, I kept north along Main to Martin Street, crossing Federal north of the Green and entering into the Cade neighborhood containing Washington Street. Here, the stately avenues had not entirely lost their elm-shaded dignity. Mansion after mansion claimed my gaze, most of them decrepit and boarded up amidst neglected grounds, but one or two here and there showed signs of occupancy. The most sumptuous I took to be the home of Old Man Marsh. In all these streets, no living thing was visible, and I wondered at the complete absence of cats and dogs from Innsmouth. Also at the tightly shuttered condition of all the third store and attic windows. At the street's end, I crossed a small, uncertain bridge. It was then that I saw the tumble-down fire station and noticed the red-faced, bushy-bearded, watery-eyed old man in nondescript rags who sat on a bench chattering with a pair of unkept but not abnormal-looking firemen. This was Zadok Allen, the crazed 96-year-old drunkard whose tale of Innsmouth and its shadow proved to be so hideous and incredible. Obtaining his attention was as easy as the grocery boy had implied. I had merely to show my bottle of bootleg whiskey, and he was spiriting me away to a secluded part of the beach, but probably as much to keep from having to share with his two fireman friends as anything else. Getting him to talk was as easy as getting his attention.
It was old Captain Obed done it. Him that found out Morn was good for him in the South Sea Islands. Everybody was in a bad way them days. Trade falling off, mills losing business. Obed Marsh, he had three ships afloat. Brigantine Columbia, Brig Hetty, and Bark Sumatra Queen. He was the only one who's kept on with the East Indian Pacific trade.
He was different from other seamen.
Different? Well, you might say that. Never was nobody like old Captain Obert. Old Limmer Satan. I can mind him a-telling about furrin parts, and a-ranting at all the folks. Just a-raging and a-roaring.
Fools ye be. Stupid fools for going to Christian meeting and bearing your burdens meek and lowly. What get you for it? What does it profit ye? Oughter get better gods like some of the folks in the Injies. Gods that'd bring you good fishing in return for your sacrifices. And it'd really answer folks' prayers. Laugh, damn ye. There'll be an island east of Okathaiti where there'll be stone ruins older than anybody knows. Ruins all wall away like they've been under the sea once with picked hectares of awful monsters all over them. The natives around there has all the fish they can catch, and sports bracelets and armlets and head rigs made out of a queer kind of gold and covered with pictures of monsters, just like the ones carved over the ruins. Sort of fish-like frogs, or frog-like fishes drawn like they was a human beings. Nobody knows where they got all this stuff, nor how they manages to find fish in plenty, even when the very next island's got lean pickings. But I knows. Damn your eyes! Obed Marsh knows!
And how did he know, Mr. Allen?
Nobody ever believes me now when I tell him. And I don't suppose you will, young fella. Though, come to look at you have got kind of them sharp reading eyes like Obed Marsh had. Oh, Obed, he got the truth out of them heathen. And he learned that these things on this earth as most folks never heard. It seems these islanders were sacrificing heaps of their young men and maidens to some kind of god things that lived under the sea and getting all kinds of favor in return. What they done to the victims, well, ain't for me to say. And I guess Obed wa'n't none too sharp about asking. What the things agreed to give in return was plenty of fish druv in from all over the sea and a few gold-like things now and then. Now, that was at first. But them frogfish things wanted more.
More?
Yeah. After a while, sacrifices weren't enough for them. The things started hankering after mixing with the folks and having giant ceremonies on the big days, Maeve and Halloween. The islanders kind of balked when it came to mating with them toad-like fishes. But finally, they learnt something that's put a new face on the matter. Them things told them that if they mixed bloods, there'd be children as they'd look human at first, but later turn more and more like the things down there. And this is the important part, young fella. Them as turned into fish things and went into the water wouldn't never die. Them things never died except they was kilt violent. Well, sir, by the time Obed knowed them islanders, they was all full of fish blood from the deep water things. They thought what they got was well worth all they'd had to give up. And I guess Obed kind of thought the same himself, because they showed him a lot of rites and incantations as had to do with them sea things. In the end, they gave him a funny thingamajig made out of lead or something that'd bring him up. The idea was to drop it down to water with the right prayers and such. The things were scattered all over the world, so as anybody that looked about could find a nest and bring them out if they was wanted.
Did he ever use that knowledge?
Yeah, that'd be good. What? Oh, no, not then. The captain was sharp for gain and found he could get them gold-like things so cheap it'd pay him to make a specialty of them. Things went on that way for years, and Obed started up the refinery in town. You see, he didn't dare sell the pieces like they was. For folks would be all the time asking questions. Well, all the same, his crew would get a piece and dispose of it now and then, even though they was swore to keep quiet.
The Marsh Tiara.
Yeah. That caused a bit of commotion, that did. But that was after. After it all happened.
After what happened, Mr.
I'm Allen? Getting to it, young fella. Well, come about 1838, when I was 7 years old, Obed, he went to them islands one last time.
Wiped out. All them island people, every man, woman, and child, all wiped out between voyages. The other islanders must have got wind of what was going on. Pious cusses. Didn't leave nothing standing except what parts of the ruins is too big to knock down. No trace of no gold-like things. And none of the nearby folks that breathe a word about the matter won't even admit there's ever been people on that island. Lost. All of it lost. Damn their eyes. Damn their eyes!
Well, that naturally hit Obed pretty hard, seeing as his normal trade was doing very poor. Most of the folks around town took the hard times kind of sheep-like and resigned. Oh, they was in bad shape because the fishing was petering out and the mills weren't doing none too well. I think that may have been what set Obed a-raging and made him do what he did.
Ye be sheep. That's what ye be. Dull, stupid sheep a-moaning and a-praying to a Christian heaven that didn't help ye none. Well, ye can take your crosses and your holy books and be damned. I knows of folks as prays to God that gives something you really need. And I says, if a good bunch of men stand by me, I can maybe get a holt of sartin powers as it bring plenty of fish and quite a bit of gold. There'll be more on the sea than just what you can catch in nets. There'll be powers. Powers in the sea.
Of course, them as served on the Sumatra Queen and seed the island knowed what he meant. But them as didn't got kind of swayed by what Obed had to say and begun to ask him what he could do to set him on the way to a faith as it'd bring him results. Well, Obed set on the preachers first. They run the congregational parson out of town, and the Methodist fella quit. He never did see resolved Babcock, the Baptist parson, again. But they fought till they was all gone. Wrath of Jehovah. I was a mighty little critter, but I heard what I heard. I heard what I heard.
Dagon and Ashtoreth are their names.
Yeah.
Belial and Beelzebub are their lieutenants.
Thluthan.
The golden calf and the idols of Canaan are their abominations.
Yeah.
Meaning.
Tickle. Person.
Yeah.
Meaning.
God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Yeah.
Tickle.
Thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting.
Thluthan.
Paris.
Thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians.
That's crazy, Mr. Allen. Monstrous. It couldn't have happened that way.
Don't believe me, hey? Then just tell me, young fella, why Captain Obed and some 20 other folks used to row out the Devil Reef in the dead of night and chant things. You could hear them all over town where the wind was right. And tell me why Obed was always dropping heavy things down the other side of the reef where the bottom shoots down like a cliff. Tell me what he'd done with that funny-shaped lead thingamajig as the islanders give him. Hey, boy! And why'd the new church parsons wear them queer robes and cover themselves with them gold-like things Obed brung, eh?
I don't know.
You're beginning to see, eh? Maybe it'd like to have been me in them days, watching out to sea from the cupola top of my house. Suppose one night you seed something heavy heaved off an Obed's dory beyond the reef, and then there, next day, a young fella was missing from home, eh? Did anyone ever see hide or hair of Hiram Gilman again? Did they? And Nick Pierce? And Llewellyn Waite? And Adon Hiram Southwick? And Henry Garrison, eh? Anyways, that was the time Obed begun to get on his feet again. Other folks was prospering, too. Fish begun to swarm into the harbor, fit to kill. Some Kingsport fishermen heard about the catch and come up in sloops, but was all lost. Nobody never seen him again. Remember, I ain't saying Obed was set on having things just like they was on that island. I don't think he aimed to do no mixing, nor raise no young'uns to take to the water. He was just willing to pay heavy for them gold things. And I guess the others was satisfied. For a while.
For a while, Mr. Allen?
Come in 46. The town done some looking and thinking for itself. It was Selectman Mowry that set it off, that got the town so riled up finally.
It's done gone on too long. There's been too many folks missing, and not a family in Innsmouth has not got an empty bed.
That's right.
There's been not too much wild preaching in meeting on a Sunday. Too much talking that ain't in the book.
Dagon's.
You all know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that'd be over now. The decent folk of this town have took it back. Last night, a party followed Captain Obed's crowd back to the reef. That were the shots you all heard betwixt the dories.
I hear them.
We got aboard, yes, sir. What? We got Obed and 32 others in the gold right now. Everything under control, just head on your homes and we'll take care of it for you.
So we all went home with everybody wondering just what was afoot and just what charge against them the selectmen could get to Holt. God, if anybody'd looked ahead. A couple of weeks later, when nothing had been thrown into the sea for that long... Awful night. I see them. I was up in the cupola. Hordes of them. Swarms of them. All over the reef and swimming up the harbor into the Minooksett. God, what happened in the streets of Innsmouth that night? They rattled our door, but Pa wouldn't open. What? Then he clomb out the kitchen window with his musket to find Selectman Mallory and see what he could do. Mounds of the dead and the dying. Shots and screams. Shouting in Old Square and Town Square and New Church Green. Jail thrown open. Proclamation. Treason. Called it the plague when folks came in and found half our people missing. Nobody left. But them is a giant in with Obed and them things. Or else keep quiet. Never hear of my pa no more. Good morning. Everything cleaned up. But they was traces. Obed, he kind of took charge. He was right far gone then, Obed was.
Now, hear me. There's things as are gotta be changed. Others will worship with us at meeting time, and certain houses has got to entertain. Guest, them from the sea wants to mix with folks like they're done in the South Seas, and I, for one, didn't feel bound to stop them. They brung us fish and treasure and should have what they hankered after. Nothing'll be different on the outside, only you'll keep shy of strangers if you knows what's good for you. Them is to help special that get special rewards, gold and such. No use balking, for there was millions of them down there. You seed that last night. Yield up enough sacrifices and savage knick-knacks and harbridge in the town when they wanted it, and they'd let well enough alone. All in the band of the faithful, the order of Dagon, and the children should never die, but go back to the mother Hydra and father Dagon, what we all come from once. Yeah! Yeah! Kakuru Katan!
Yeah! Yeah!
This is the end of Side 1. Please stop your tape and fast forward to the end. Then turn it over for more on Side 2.